My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And we're going to be continuing our From Hell coverage, but first, some business.
Octobriana, 1976, world's first blacklight comic, in stores everywhere now, doing well, selling well, so pick one of these up if you want it, fluorescent ink, unlike any other comic book, and it's now available on Comixology. All three editions are one book on there, so if you like to read your comics on screen and Comixology is what you use, it's now available there, along with the Process zine, which is a separate book that you can get on Comixology, but it's 350 pages of how I made this thing, all the drafts that went into it, scans of the original art, all those details. So whatever you want with Octobriana, 1976 is now available.
Patreon.com/EdPiskor is where I'm serializing my Red Room comic strip. Issue one is up there in total or damn near close to it. As we speak, $3 will get you the complete archive. I've been grinding this summer, Jimmy. Look at that page amount right there. Where's that camera?
Yeah, that's a great shot.
Yeah. 140 pages down. It's going to receive a print edition in 2021. So if you can't wait, Patreon's the way to go. Patreon.com/EdPiskor. Those links are in the description below.
And Jimmy, full issue, man. Ready to read in time for Halloween. Perfect reading this Halloween season.
Yes, sir. And issue two is going to start up the very next week, man. So the strips are going to be serialized for the foreseeable future. Let's continue our From Hell coverage, chapter 9 through 12, I believe, and got some questions about like our thoughts on the color edition. This is the first time I've seen it.
Yeah, I don't have too much to say about it. It's fine. I don't begrudge creators being able to resell their work over and over. That's the great thing about owning your work. And certainly some people won't look at a black and white comic. So if this is what it takes to get you to read From Hell, by all means. I do like the black and white presentation. One cool thing about the color is it is by Eddie Campbell. So you are getting the artist applying the color and you know, sometimes that's a fight between one artist and another. I think if you have the same artist, you're often going to get the best results. This is a tough sample to look at because this chapter is such a specific thing.
Yeah.
This has to be the hardest chapter to color, in my opinion. But it gives you a taste of what you can expect if you are curious what the color edition looks like.
All right, let's jump in, man. You know, we said it before, we said it again, the beauty of the Eddie Campbell artwork and the intricacy of the Alan Moore story, it's coming to its climax. And this video, we'll call it the downward spiral of Sir William Gall, man.
Interesting, Ed. In my notes, I actually described this as a spiral, this chapter, chapter 9, but it's not Gall in this chapter.
Yeah, sure.
In this one, it's Mary Kelly, who we have seen. All her friends have been murdered now viciously, horribly. Her husband thought she was murdered because there was a prostitute or a woman killed who was using her name, Mary Kelly. She knows her days are numbered. And this is the chapter of her kind of losing it. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Sure. And I thought you were going to say it was a chapter of Aberline spiraling down, man, because he's not doing too well. His patience is wearing thin this ish.
It is a fair point. Like, everybody at this point is in bad shape. The police commissioner, I think, resigns either, I think, in this chapter. It's everything's wrong. You know, like, this has gotten totally out of control. The crowd, the people of the area, you could say they're spiraling.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're chasing the newspaper articles that are having letters. Tons of letters are being written by Jack the Ripper, you know, allegedly. And we'll see the people of London doing that, you know, going back into their office to finish up some work. And meanwhile, they're penning a fake letter from Jack the Ripper. It's incredible what the net that Alan Moore casts,
right,
in terms of like, what does this event mean? And how do we see it through the eyes of so many different people that are involved in it, even casually, just people that are buying the newspapers?
Yeah, and right here from the start, we have a guy selling tchotchkes that are going to be like little totems to protect you from getting your guts ripped out by Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, that referenced some mad monk who had killed somebody there centuries earlier. And I think in the appendix, it's not even sure that that's a real story. It's almost like just the perfect opportunity for somebody to show up with those tchotchkes, spin a little bit of a tale, and build on what's already in the air for these people.
William Gall was given a task by the Crown. Very simple. There are these four girls engaged in conspiracy who know one of our darkest secrets. Crown Prince is a friggin' douchebag and knocked up a commoner, and there's a threat to the Crown that was born floating around in some kind of orphanage right now. What Queen Elizabeth did not say was splatter these chicks all over the cobblestones and create an uproar in the community. We just wanted a simple disappear job. Why can't you be like Harvey Keitel in Pulp Fiction and just kind of clean up the situation without making too much of a mess? So there's a sequence where the queen is like, William, you gotta pump the brakes, man. You like we didn't ask for this. It's doing a little too much. And with a few mere sentences, man, all that Sir William Gall has to do is equate what he's doing with the people that he's killing with being like Robespierre and the French revolutionaries. And she's like, you know what, on a second thought, go ahead, do your shit.
Yeah, do what you got to do. Which goes back to his Masonic order that he's a part of. The Golden Dawn, apparently another one of these groups that's what he equates to that French uprising. And we see him interact with that guy at this point. It's masterful, the storytelling.
Yeah.
And I've been talking about how if you're into conspiracy theory, if you enjoy conspiracy theory, it is rife through this book.
Yeah.
And some of it's very obvious, you know, I mean, he's working, the police know him, they know what he's doing. He's sort of directing them to help both help him and keep the investigators in a different direction. So there's some very clear conspiracy stuff, but all the Mason stuff is just read conspiracy theory. Right. It is rich with Masonic lore, and that's a big part of this story and where Gall especially is coming from.
At Gall's house, man, is his resident Igor, known as Netley, who's getting a little, he's tired of this stuff. He didn't sign up. All he wanted to do was drive a coach.
Yeah, Netley's been in over his head from the get-go, from the beginning when he's driving the coach around London and realizing that there are bigger designs at work here. Poor Netley, but Dr. Gall's not letting him off either. There's one. They have a job to do, and they're not finished with that job yet. Man up, Netley. And we see Mary Kelly just, you know, I mentioned the spiraling. She's drinking. She's going to have several sexual partners in this last, I don't know, 20 hours of her life or whatever. Inconsolable, you know. It seems like it's fate that she's going to meet this horrible end. It's not even that she's going to die. It's that she's going to be mutilated by this butcher.
And as the killings were escalating, as the killings were going down, this just the vicious nature was escalating. It'll reach its crescendo with her, of course. There's the sequence with Aberline. He's given Mary like a couple extra, you know, a couple extra dollars like as a loan. You know, she's very grateful. But at a certain point, he's like, you know, maybe next time when you pay me back, we could go get a room together. And it like just kills everything. Like it just, you could see in like two panels, it destroys her whole perception of him even, man, where she's like, damn, the one dude who was my friend and didn't want to fuck me wants to fuck me. There it is, man. That psychic medium guy who got dissed by Sir William Gall is like, I'm going to cancel this motherfucker, man. I'm canceling this dude. He hurt my feelings. I'm going to the police.
Man, Gall does really dismiss him just outright. Because the psychic, when they meet, the psychic expresses his sort of admiration for Gall and you know, what he's done as a surgeon and such holds him in such high regard. And Gall's like, that's how much I disdain what you do.
Man of science.
Yes.
Even though he does see goat gods and shit like that.
Well, that's even more how dismissive he is.
Right.
Like, he's the only guy who's having these actual visions.
Yeah.
Ongoing inquest, you know, these scenes are, I guess, like public revelations of what is known, as well as having like witness testimonies and things of that sort. I think a lot of this stuff, if you read the notes at the back, you see where a lot of these records, you know, how you have a record of this stuff.
Right.
A lot of it comes out of these kind of public inquisitions and things.
Right. This is one of the sequences with Sir William Gall and Netley that I really dig, where they're going to add another set of fake, you know, Jack the Ripper notes, except this time it is from the main guys, but Sir William Gall is from such aristocracy that he can't even imagine how a dumb fuck would pen a letter to, you know, the cops or whatever. So he almost leaves it up to Netley. Let's just say you were the killer, right? How would you process a note to the feds? And can you please do it? Do you know how to write? Can you please do it in your chicken scratch?
By the way, drops a kidney onto the paper. That's going to be a part of our little letter, Netley. And Netley's so defeated. Like, his body language is just crushed. He's so in over his head. And Gall takes a minute, to kind of explain, like, yeah, of course you are. We are in hell. His interpretation of these mystical events of seeing that goat god and everything that's happening is that, yes, that's what we're doing. We're battling these forces of good and evil. We are in hell, Natalie. You should feel this way.
How
And of
about
course, that's how you start the letter, is the return address from hell.
that Alan, I mean the Eddie Campbell hand styles, dude, as Netley, pretty good, right? But it's not going to be the only cool hand style lettering we're going to see from Mr. Campbell.
Yeah, it's a really nice page. If you were going to buy a From Hell page, that'd be a really cool one to buy because of that interesting hand lettering. It's a great graphic design.
And then you turn the page, and we have the people of London who are enjoying their pastime of penning these fake letters to the media. You have a proper man of the house.
Man of cloth.
Is that a priest?
I think so. Oh, there's a holy Bible on his desk, and I think that's a collar.
So he's doing his thing, man.
Guy at the pub, kids.
And of course the kids would. But look at the lettering, all different from each. Some of them you have to imagine that. Like, I don't know about you, man, but like when I would have some wall graffiti, I'd be like, hey man, why don't you draw a little something right here? Maybe one or two of those is a different hand.
Mary Kelly, looking for strength in numbers, perhaps bringing another lover into the house.
You know what I was thinking? I was like, oh man, she's gonna set this girl up for the okey doke, man. Like, just set her, like, get her toasted and bounce.
Dark. Joe's not very into it. Mary Kelly's disappointed, to say the least. Angry. And different characters suggest to her, like, leave. Like, you got to get out of here. It's hopeless. Like, she has no money. She can't go anywhere. It sounds great, but it's just not a realistic option.
Even the prince, sneaks out of the tower to tell her to get the hell out of there. But that's like one of those, when they talk about, people of privilege, like making suggestions to others, and how it is fully ineffective. Like, you get a page of that, man, where the prince is just like, oh yeah, you gotta go somewhere.
One thing that happens in all of this, there's a window broken. She's trying to share her apartment with people. Again, I think trying to not be alone. And she hides a key right inside the broken window, and Netley gets hold of the key,
Yes.
which is going to become important.
William Gall informing the police commissioner that he's got one more round to do. And the commissioner's just like, I'm done. It's over for me. We did everything we could. We tried to get you to stop, but no more.
Yeah, calls him mad, and when Gall leaves, turns in his resignation. Or writes his resignation.
And the chapter ends right at the doorstep of Mary Kelly.
Yeah, she takes a couple of gentlemen suitors. They come and go, and then the final guy to enter the house, we see Dr. Gall actually enter. He has a copy of the key from Netley, lets himself in. What a chilling way to end this chapter. Knowing everything that has come up to this point, what a dark ending. And I think that's the longest chapter, 58 pages. Like, it is a lot of building that suspense. Like, we know she's going to be a victim. We know how history plays out, and it's just getting to that moment, and it's a terrible page.
We have throughout this comic up to now, these 500 pages we've read or whatever, passage of time, over and over again with the little calendar and all that. Let's slow everything down to one dark, disturbing, disgusting night while, who is the last person you would want to put some surgical steel in the hands of? Perhaps some kooky guy who's having crazy flashbacks, acid trips, seeing goat gods, and given free rein by the crown to do whatever he wants.
What a slasher. Too.
Totally.
It's a complete design. Like, if you did a horror movie that had nothing to do with this, that would be a good design for a slasher type character.
Agreed. And this chapter, chapter 10, is just him, I don't want to say systematically taking her apart, because it seems pretty pretty vicious, but we're dealing with some nine-panel grid of cutting this lady to bits.
Yeah, if you read the appendix for this chapter, nobody knows exactly what happens in this room.
Mm-hmm.
What they know is the end result.
Right.
And so Moore describes this as Gall's actions are based on a, quote, kind of speculative seance divination on his part. And knowing Moore's practices with magic, it's very entertaining to me to think about how exactly he got to this point. What was done to kind of achieve the writing of this particular chapter? Extremely graphic. I didn't realize it, but you can find photos. There were crime scene photos of this, so you can find photos of Mary Kelly's remains.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that you do that. It's shocking to me how graphic they are. I like the idea that it's systemic, that, you know, the way he's cutting this person up, because we see these flashbacks that have been built as part of the story, that he's having these moments of kind of flashing around. And he flashes back to, I guess, examinations, you know, dissecting human bodies whenever he was a student and explaining the different organs and things. And so, like, that's one of the bits of flashback that we see.
Weird flash forwards to, you know, modern day. Like, this dude is psychotropic, man. Like, he's
seeing visions.
He's, you know, fully gone.
There's your example of going back to his classroom days and having to talk. You know, talk to the instructors or the whoever it is that's judging him through this process to prove his knowledge of anatomy.
The linen paper is back.
Yes, it is. One of the details of this crime scene that stand out is that the kettle is melted. And speculation on that is it has to do with burning up the heart, which is a Masonic ritual, the idea of spreading the ashes of the heart. But the heart being such a dense muscle that it has to be a super high temperature. Reference to the anatomy lesson from Swamp Thing, right? And this could be called the anatomy lesson, too. Like, we are having things described, where different organs are, how you reach them, what they look like. Almost literally, there are parts of this chapter that are an anatomy lesson.
This part right here, the drawing of it, dude, just cutting that fatty, like, leg tissue. Extra gross.
Yeah.
Black ink abounds, man. This is a bloody fucking mess.
Here we have the flash forward to the late 20th century, 100 years in the future or so. This is incredible. The office space, I spent years in that office space, and it's soul-crushing, and that's how he describes it. Like, Gall is appalled by this. He describes women dress in a way that's just showing their sex, I think, is what is the word phrase he uses, and the men have no response. It's like they're dead. It's incredible, like, the description, especially, like, it fits Gall's character pretty well in his, where he's at. And then the computer images, it's
right.
Just all very strange. This was one of the chapters when I read this the first time that really stood out to me.
Yeah, me too. Like I was going to say that this is the one where it's just like, okay, this is the way they were selling this book. It's like based on this chapter or something.
You know what? There's one piece here, page 25, and there's a flash here where he's being called Tommy, and he says, "I'm not Tom, I'm not Jack, I'm William." I don't know what that's a reference to, and I couldn't find it in the notes.
Right.
That one stood out to me because most of the other stuff, I think, was fairly straightforward, but that I have no idea what that's a reference to. And here we see the heart being cut out and thrown into the fire, and it's just, I don't know, man. It's the height of darkness.
Yes.
He does it in a clinical way where he shows no emotion throughout this whole thing.
Chapter 11, The Unfortunate Mr. Druitt, and the lead is not buried with that title. The Masons know that William Gall's running amok. They got to pump the brakes. They got to try to figure this out. They got to cease it. And the murders are done. The murders are completed. And maybe, you know, the public imagination will be sated once they have a record, once they have somebody.
Right. That's the puzzle that the police and the Masons are trying to solve, is like, they've got to offer up somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, this can't just disappear without somebody hanging these murders on somebody. And right, that's your chapter title, fellow.
We have Mr. Druitt, who's a teacher at the school, and and also the coach for the cricket team with all these young boys. Look, they did towel snapping in Victorian times. These seasoned law enforcement guys, when they see this crime scene, they've never seen anything like it. And she's been there for a minute, so the smells are crazy. You know, there's a lot of fucking going on that bed, too, so there's all sorts of extra body fluids on that shit.
Yeah, they have to wait, too. They're waiting for, I guess, the new commissioner. It's just the worst of the worst. As bad as it can be, they're all there, and they can't really do anything except smell it and look at it for hours.
So the Masons need a patsy. And this Mr. Druitt guy, he's not of means. He's not upper class. He has no real family, no kids, nothing like that. Nobody's going to miss him, they decide.
Aberline goes to get his drink dressed up fancy on this day. You know, this is when he was hoping to collect that loan.
Yeah.
And Emma's nowhere to be found.
Yep. And he's real salty about it, man. She leaves a note and is just like, I gotta go. When he sees a hooker on the street, he's gonna take all of his rage out, all of his anger on Mary Kelly, out on her. Telling the cops, man, go take this girl away. Cop's like, yo, this is Hamsterdam. He's like, we let these girls do this here. He's like, not this time. This is the Masons aside and things.
Yeah, we keep seeing the Mason, the secret ring.
Right.
As they're making their plans, their concoctions, the conspiracy to figure out how to manage this.
And Gull is just more and more, like, he's down the rabbit hole completely, man.
Well, he's done his thing, you know, like, his whole takeaway is, like, he was put on this earth for a purpose, and he didn't know what that was at the beginning of this book. And that's part of having those visions and seeing that God figure. This is his mission, and once that last, once Mary Kelly is killed, he's done. He's done this thing that's going to shape the 20th century, that's going to keep the Masons in the proper control. That's his purpose in life. And once it's over, you know, he can do whatever he wants. Like, at that point,
man,
he's carefree.
Yeah. Poor Mr. Druitt. After the Masons get their targets set on him, they set him up for his downfall. It's a real good sequence, too. He gets called to the office. And we saw those cricket players earlier. One of the little boys who can't even look up and isn't even allowed to speak is calling Mr. Druitt in for kissing him, touching him, and shit like that. And just when you see this kid, you just know the kid's being muffled. He's being forced to go along with all this shit. And Mr. Druitt's done, man. Doesn't get to be a teacher anymore. And his whole world's just falling apart. Moore's a sick fucker, dude. Cause like he sells it really well. Like throughout the whole issue, just the downfall of this guy.
Yeah, there are pieces planted too. Like he outlines everything that's happening. There's a guy that works in his same building who's, you know, ex-cop. Like it's spelled out very clearly how this is gonna work. Even getting him to go have a drink, you know, confide in him. And one of the things that works really well is write down your feelings.
Yeah.
Which becomes essentially a suicide note.
Right.
Yeah, it is very, very sick, very gross, but you gotta imagine not the only time somebody's been framed up for, because you need to deliver, you need to close the case.
They get them sauced up, take a drink. And then when this dude delivers...
Put a Mickey in the drink, too.
Yeah.
Because we don't want any resistance.
Right. This guy delivers Mr. Druitt to the coppers. The bobbies take hold of him.
This is a fun sequence. You see them putting bricks into his pockets. They're going to throw him in the river. He's going to drown.
Yeah.
Whenever they recover it... Oh, I guess it's in the next chapter.
It is, yeah. Very beginning.
Whenever they describe this... It's very precise language, and it's stones in his pocket. And the guy's like, they were bricks. And he's like, you write it out as stones, which is, again, another Masonic reference.
Chapter 12, man, the apprehensions of Mr. Lees. Mr. Lees is that psychic medium guy, psychic to Queen Elizabeth.
This is a funny choice. So he's summoning whatever spirit, you know, the queen wants to talk with somebody or whatever. I guess that's from her point of view, because... In the beginning of the book, Lise admits that he wasn't a psychic. So right. I guess that's her imagination, not what he's actually summoning.
Of course, yeah, yeah. And he's a real, like, he's a, in, you know, in hacking, they call it social engineering. The easiest way to get a password is for you to give me your password by me asking you some questions, man. And he plays that little social engineer game with this guy right here who's, he's looking for Sir William Gull's address. You know, he's still cranky. That's Sir William Gull. Punked him down. So this is the issue where Sir William Gull gets canceled, man. The early form of Twitter was being a snitch.
This is pretty well done, too, I think. This
incredible.
Very incredible. Compelling reading this. So he goes to Aberline. He sort of does his little song and dance, you know, going into his trance or whatever.
Yeah, shits his pants, has a tremor.
But gives up the address and is like, you guys have nothing. Like, let's go find this dude. And it lines up. You know, like, Aberline's looking for a surgeon. He's looking for somebody that would be maybe in this other section of town.
Right. But Aberline is still you know, I got nothing. Let's do it. They go to Sir William Gall's house. It takes a minute until they find out that they're in, like, the surgeon to the stars home. And ask the wife about the murders, like, but even still, like, Aberline is leading the witness, man. He's like, listen, I know it's nothing, but we're here, we got this guy, he says that, you know, the spirits told him to come here. Do you know anything about your husband? She swears up and down, two pages, man, and my husband is innocent, and I'm gonna tell the queen, and blah, blah, blah.
Until she drops the name and who the guy is.
Right.
It's your, her Royal Majesty's surgeon. And Aberline's like, Sir William Gull? This is a little bit of a bigger fish than I think he was hoping to encounter.
And it's great, man, because Sir William Gull pops in. May I help you? And with no resistance, when he finds out why the guys are there, William Gull's like, oh, yeah, that's me. Uh-huh. Yeah, I did it. You want something to drink? The wife is going crazy.
This is the moment where Gull even taunts Lise, have you ever had a real vision? Gets right in his ear, and he's like, I have.
Yeah, and you see Lee just shitting his pants, man. When we have the questioning part here earlier, where is it? There's a part where Lee looks so happy the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, until Gull confesses.
Right.
And the power balance definitely shifts. It's incredible. Like, we see them outside and they're like, what do we do?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The people who, you know, the people who make the rules are breaking the rules. Like, what do you do in that scenario?
Yeah, goes to the police chief and is like, well, we got him. What, now what? The police chief, of course, high up Mason. The Masons have their own way to handle this. And so that's his plan. So they go to get him. The Masons send for him to have kind of a, whatever the equivalent of a trial is. They bring him in, enter Knight of the East.
Yeah, and look at these guys. Like, how do you take these cats seriously, man, putting on their little gimmicks?
And he doesn't. You know, whenever they challenge him, he says, I have no peers here present. And goes on to explain, like, he's doing the work of God. And delivered from God to his ear. Like, these guys are, they mean nothing.
Right. And they let him bounce, man, but they're like, they're trying to figure out, we let this cat out of the cage, what the heck do we do? And the consensus agrees, man, he's insane. So we have to get him out of town, we gotta put him in an asylum, and then let him talk. Like, that's actually, like, one of the things that, when guys leave the CIA, when they descend from the CIA, like, that they talk about, like, we let you say whatever, because some Okie Finoki guy who's talking about seeing spaceships, who's gonna believe you anyway?
They need a doctor to sign off on his mental whatever, and this is his son-in-law who is a doctor, but you see, like, the Masons show up. They're like the Men in Black.
Right.
They talk about everything they could do. They could put a body in the ground and say it's him and then send him, you know, keep him sequestered somewhere.
And they show, like, these long panels are just their fantasies of Sir William Gall, and they're like just enjoying it. You know, this is the Elks Club. These are a couple guys like just sitting around talking shit.
They also reference Druid. Rumors should come into circulation to confuse the scent. Say, for example, that the murderer were a deranged young man who took his own life after the crime by drowning in the Thames. Well, we've already seen, here it is, pulling out that body. You know, like it's playing out almost in real time as they're cross-cutting.
Right.
Amazing storytelling. You know, it's several threads that are being woven through this chapter, including possible futures and fantasies and stuff, but all concluding with, it's already done. You know, like this whole book, this is the premise. It's already done.
And it's great. We're on chapter 12, still a couple chapters to go, up an epilogue or two. But there's more story to tell. I wonder where it's going.
It's a wild. This is another one of those books that is graphic novel, such a, it just means binding. But
Right.
this is one of those where it was like before it just meant a spine on the side of the book when people were really going for it. Like, we're going to do something ambitious here. We're going to tell a big story.
And it's going to take several videos for us to give this book its justice, man. So we'll wrap it up. We'll wrap it up next week. K favors, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Octobrion is in stores now, also on Comixology. Go in quick. So if you see it in person, get your hands on it ASAP. Red Room, my latest comic project, is being serialized on Patreon. Patreon.com/EdPiskor. $3 will get you the complete archive.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at the links below this video.
Give him some margin orders, Jimmy. We've got to go finish this book ourselves.
Read more comics.
Moore.